This week on Three Sides of the Coin, Kevin Valentine talks about how he auditioned to record on the Psycho Circus album.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Three Sides of the Coin. I am one of your co-hosts, Michael Brandvold, and as always, I'm joined by Tommy Summers from Minnesota. And
Soda.
Mitch LaFon, who, I don't know, Mitch is just our resident Kiss fanboy, right? Mm.
Lover, yes. Of all Kiss.
Lover of all Kiss. Except Vinnie Vincent.
It's very true.
And we are joined by a very, very special guest today. So, Mitch, why don't you tell everybody who's watching and the few that are listening who is on screen with us right now?
Well, we have a very special guest, like you said. He's been on three Kiss albums, believe it or not. Name of Kevin Valentine. More albums than Vinnie Vincent he's played on.
How do you like that?
Welcome, Hi, Kevin. Yeah. Welcome.
Hi there.
So let's not assume that everybody is the master of all Kiss geek knowledge like Mitch.
Okay.
And give us a little bit of intro info as to... Kevin, what albums were you on, and what was your role? I mean, you're not a member of KISS, so how did you play on a record?
You are correct. This all came down through Eric Singer. Eric and I were and our buds from a small east side town called Euclid. It's outside of Cleveland. And Eric moved out here before I did and had connections with Paul and the band, and I was first introduced to the band through Eric. He was playing on the demos for Hot in the Shade and could not finish some of the tracks, so he suggested to Paul, you know, to give me a call and give me a shot on the tracks, and that rat went rather well. So I did the demos for that record, and then Eric Carr came in and retracked the drums. But that's how I started playing with the band, got to know them, which was a thrill because, you know, I was in a band called Breathless in 1979, and the first time I came to Los Angeles, we opened before Kiss at the Forum. You know, so yeah, and that's a hard job to do and open for Kiss, you know, because the, Mitch, as you know, Kiss fans don't give a shit about anybody but Kiss.
Right.
So yeah, so it was a pleasure to play with the guys and be involved with them.
So yeah. So that was a demo recording that you started with.
Correct.
How?
Correct.
Let's get into the meat of this. You're on three Kiss albums.
Yeah. I believe I may be on part of Hot in one of the Hot in the Shade songs. Yeah. The engineer. See, we tracked with electronic drums, so it was very easy to overdub and or just keep things. So I heard that I may be on one of those tracks, even though I'm not sure of that, you know, go ahead.
Well, Hot in the Shade is a collection of demos that was released, and as far as the story goes, you're on two songs on that album, Love Me to Hate You, and I forget what the other one is right now, but there's...
See, Mitch knows more than I do.
Well,
be careful when you say that.
I don't want it to go to his head.
Yeah.
No, but I think the story goes, you know, we've talked about this before. You mentioned that when you put the foundation into a house, it's hard to strip that foundation out. And so I think your drums do appear on two tracks.
Yeah. And it's nothing to do with Eric because, you know, again, it's a, you know, analogy of visual. If you had to replace the foundation under a house, I mean, it's just not going to work. So many times you got to keep the old foundation, which maybe in that case was me. So, it could be true. Again, I wasn't privy to that. And as you know, Kiss does things like that. You know, they go for the best of everything. And again, nothing to do with me, but, you know, if it was working better that way, they kept my track, you know, which is fine by me. I mean, it's got to work in the end.
Let me ask you a quick question.
If you were to listen back to Hot in the Shade, could you pick out your drumming?
Yeah, that's a tough one. I probably could. But again, if Eric would have done some overdubs on the track, you know, it would change the tone of it. So I'll have to go back and listen. I haven't heard that in ages.
I have a question. Can you, Kevin, take a little time to walk us through, for all of us that are not musicians, when a song is being written or you have a song that's written and they bring you in to do demos, how does the demo part of it affect the song? Do you have input with how the drum part is? Do they tell you to play it a certain way? What do you do?
Yeah, actually, it can be, yes. And I remember that, I would kind of be pissed off if I were Eric if I had to go in and play my parts and good or bad, they were the parts that maybe the songs or parts of the songs were based around. So yes, you do have input. And, I remember, doing some things where, I think on Forever, I did something. And it was kind of a cool little thing in the song, and it added something. And I thought, well, that's kind of cool because I really did add something to the song. And so the more that's built, I guess the more generic your part, the easier it is to replace. And the more instrumental, meaning meaningful your parts are that contributed to the song, A, they're harder to replace, and B, along down the line, people are going to say, "No, how about this part? How about this part? You know, this was cool. Let's do that part here. This that really set off the chorus or whatever." Okay. So yeah, it does make a difference. Yeah, sometimes, demos are very, very rough, and it doesn't mean much. But those were not like that. They were done at Fortress with Pat Regan, and they were done on a 24 track. As if they were record masters.
Let's use Forever as an example. Mm-hmm. So does Paul come to you and say, hey, I want to play this song for you, sits down in front of you and plays it acoustically? Does he have something recorded and he says, here, listen to this, Kevin, and then add your input? Or how does it get started?
With those sessions, Paul came in and we all, suited up. I was behind the kit phones, Paul, everyone, and he just, whips out his six string and here's the song, and we start going through the song. Okay, let's bring the drums in here, that kind of a deal. And then, and you do, Paul has the structure and it's a great song going in. So you just contribute your parts to it and help build the song.
Okay.
Now, was that the answer to the question?
No, that was great because I'm not a musician, so it's like that's some of the stuff that's fascinating to me as a fan is just to hear what's it like and how do you work that together, because we never talk to anybody that's been in the studio with them, so this is neat to hear all of this detail.
Now, on Gene's demos, for Psycho Circus, he had a lot of things already, either from the past recordings or just demos that he did at his house, maybe with a drum machine or something like that. And I would listen to the song, and he would. When that happens, I'm listening to his demo, so I have to honor some of his parts that the song was built around. Right?
Before we get to Psycho Circus, let's just get us into, and even before Revenge, after Hot in the Shade is out, Eric Carr passes away and the band's without a drummer. Did you audition for the band? Were you asked to join the band or,
No, never. Okay. I flatly refused. I'm kidding. No, they went to Eric first. They knew him better. I was not asking. Eric's a good player and a good guy, and he sings. I don't sing, and he does all the Peter stuff really great as a side note because, the way he sounds. But no, I wasn't asked. No.
So let's get to the Revenge session. Mm-hmm. You know, you played on the song Take It Off on Revenge. The song had been done. And then Bob Ezrin calls you and says, I'm not happy with the drums. Is that about right how it happened?
Yeah. Basically, it was a slight bit different. Okay. You know, now I'm trying to think who I got the call from. I did get the call. It might have even been Eric saying, okay. You know, that
I
they
have cut. To fly.
What's that?
He said, I have to fly out to do this Alice Cooper tour.
I think he had to do Alice Cooper, yeah. And they weren't happy with the track. He didn't have time. They didn't have time for him to continue to work on it. So, you know, again, they knew me from before and said, you know, have Kevin come in. So I came in and listened to the track as they had it. And again, if you will, Eric played the demo. And then I had to, you know, do his parts. To be quite truthful, I think I played, you know, mostly all of what he did, you know, because it was worked out for some reason. They didn't think it felt right, but, you know, that was their call. So, yeah, I came in and listened to it and started tracking it. And Ezrin was, you know, he's an awesome producer. I mean, he's so friggin' talented. If you don't come up with parts, I mean, he will make them for you, you know?
Right.
So, and he works in a way, and I'll get into this, Tommy, about the technical stuff, if you want to know. He works in a way as you start the song and start playing, and you'll get to, say, the first chorus, and he'll just stop tape. And he'll say, okay, we need a more energetic fill into the chorus. And they back up tape. Punch you in, and it's, you know, it's big balls to do that stuff, because, you know, like, you're vibing, you're playing, you're like, oh, this is great, I'm doing great, and all of a sudden you hear him stop, you hear the talk back, okay, listen, we need better fill going in the chorus, and you're going, fuck me, this is okay, wonderful. Here we go. So, you know, you just try and come up with another one, and it's like, no, not quite there, a little more energetic, and then you go on. And then what he would do later, would he would pick I think they did the whole record this way, and you kind of get the best of many takes. And he would go through and say, okay, let's take the verse from this take, the verse, second chorus from this take, what have you, like that. And he would have the assistant put all the pieces together. And that way you get like an optimum feel for the whole song. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, as opposed to, you know, if you had to do it in one take and say, you know, you were dragging in the third verse. Look, to be honest with you, the song would have been a great song even if I or Eric or anyone else was dragging in that third, in that third verse.
Right.
But you know, it allows you to make a really, really great song from top to bottom.
Kevin,
so that's yeah.
So when you were doing that on the Revenge album, were Gene and Paul in the studio at that time, or was it just you and Bob?
No, it was everyone, and Bruce was there too.
So. What kind of dynamic were you seeing between the band and Bob? I mean, was there a lot of mutual respect? Was there butting heads creatively? I mean,
no, I don't think so. And I was on the other side of the glass, so I didn't hear a lot of the conversations that were going on. But I know that I think of all producers that they worked with, I think they respect him highly. So, you know, unless they were really you know, this I haven't been there like Eric has been there, but I think unless they're really against something, I think they really go with what he wants, because if you think about it, I mean, he's done really great records with them.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely.
Yeah, so...
come on, Mitch, that's not what you think.
Well, no, listen, no, you got it wrong.
You got it, Mike.
I have said repeatedly that... The
that
records
he broke
are
the band
good.
Up. That's what you said.
Oh, absolutely. I think that if you look at what he did with Alice Cooper, Pink Floyd, and Kiss, after he's come in, the bands have broken up. And I think a lot of it has to do with a lot of the ghost musicians that he brings in. And I think he seeds discontent. But the albums are good. They're great albums.
Interesting.
The after album that becomes sort of, you know.
Yeah, I suppose it's best to have all the, you know, band members playing, you know, because again, you know, it's a personal thing, because it's like, hey, what the fuck, what am I allowed to say that? What the heck, you know, I'm part of the band, why aren't I on the track? And it's always better that way, but You know, it's funny. I just found out. I just went to see the Tubes down Southern California, and they were always one of my favorite bands. And I heard that when David Foster, I think, produced, well, you know, some of my favorite songs. I mean, Lukather was playing guitar, and you know, these other people were in on the record. So it's a it's a double-edged sword. I mean, we got great material. And, you know, maybe some of the band members had hurt feelings. I mean, I've been on both ends, you know. I remember I got fired from Cinderella, and that was not fun. Although I must say that probably was not a justice. I don't think it would have made a difference. They were drummer crazy, you know.
Let me ask you, Kevin. So if you're in a studio, whether it's with Kiss or anybody else, and you're playing drum tracks, and the other drummer is there, is that awkward for you?
Well, yeah, but that hasn't come up. You know what I mean? I mean, Peter has never been there on a Kiss record when I'm playing, or Eric, for that matter. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was going to say, has that ever occurred with other instances outside of Kiss?
No, I mean, I ran into Peter at Atlantic, I think. I went there to pick up my check, and he was there. And, I mean, that was kind of awkward.
Yeah, but so let's, you know, let's get to that. And you know, before you worked on the Psycho Circus album and all that secrecy, you were essentially Peter Criss's teacher for the reunion tour.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you get that call, and how does that get set up? I mean, you've got the drummer of Kiss who had just been on tour with Ace Frehley and had played at the Unplugged show and was still playing, and now you got to teach him his parts. How does that work, and how awkward is that?
It did get a little awkward. I don't know if you guys know or not, but I ran front of house sound, and monitors for that tour, that Unplugged tour, whatever the hell it was called, the convention tour, Unplugged tour. Yeah, and I remember being in SIR in New York, and I ran into Eric in the bathroom, and you know, and Ace and Peter were there because they were going to play, and I said that, with all due respect, I said to Eric, I said, dude, I mean, I don't think there's any problem. I don't think there's any worry of, you know, Peter getting back in the band, because he just didn't seem to have the ability, you know. And again, he did what he did, and it was great stuff. And I award and praise anyone that has come that far and done that much. You know, it's just not all talent. I mean, there's just all kinds of shit in life, curveballs where you things happen. So, you know, the fact that he did what he did, I think, was great. So later on, I find out that they are getting back together, the original band. And Tommy Thayer called me and asked if I would work out Peter and, you know, get things where they should be. I don't know, maybe it was too many years of hard living. I don't know. But yeah, I did. So, you know, I went into a studio in West LA here, and we had phones on, and we would listen to songs, and I would on occasion have to remind him of his stuff.
Well, so okay, I want to stop here because this is really interesting to me. Can you tell me then, when they decided to have you come in to teach Peter or help Peter to get ready for the reunion tour, did they give you a list of songs, or do they hand you a cassette and you listen to it? Did you know the songs already? And then what versions? Do you listen to the live album? Do you listen to the studio album? And then how does that progress?
Yeah, I think we did have a list of the songs that were potential songs for the tour. And we had CD players, got a simple Y chord splitter, and we'd go over the typical songs that were in the set, and probably some older songs, considering it was going to be an all original makeup. Yeah, and we would just go over the songs, and you know, it was days and days and days, and I think it worked.
Well, were there any songs that he simply just couldn't play that were on a set list, and you had to go to Gene and Paul and say, listen, he just can't play this one. You're going to have to forget about it.
No, actually not.
Okay.
No. I think there were some things that maybe he forgot parts. Like I remember, I think the beginning of Love Gun was one of them, which I think is just the killer thing. And he's like, really? And is it that part? And I said, dude, you made the part. I mean, you know, But no, there was nothing that he couldn't play. And then since we were relying on the CD many times, I know that later I think he went in the studio or a rehearsal room with Tommy, and Tommy with his guitar, and he played, and they had no cassette to rely on. You know, he had to actually play to Tommy, which would be more of a live situation.
Makes sense.
Now, yeah. did you also sit down? I know Tommy sat down with Ace. Did you also have to sit in with Ace and do drums live for Ace?
Nope. No. Didn't go there.
And go ahead, Tommy.
No, I was just going to ask, how long did this whole process take from the time that you started working with Peter the first day? Was it 8 hours a day for a week and a half? Was it a month? How long did you guys spend?
No, it wasn't that long. It was, I think we only did 4 hours a day because it was just a little fatiguing. And it was probably a week or two, if that.
Okay.
Yeah.
When the band went out on the road, did you follow along to be sort of the teacher on the road? And because I know they switched songs a little bit towards the end, did you have any input there?
No, not at all. I think once Peter got up to speed. I know he was doing records, but I don't know if he was doing any intense touring for a while. I think once he got up to speed, he was fine. And when I went to see him, Dodger Stadium or something, I thought they were quite good, at that time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So shall we move along to the album that nobody's ever talked about here, Psycho Circus? I mean, they do this tour and then they're going to put together this reunion album and everything, everybody's excited, and then you get a call.
I never played on that record. What are you talking about? Okay, I have to come out of the closet.
Yeah.
I auditioned, I think, with a few people.
You have to do an audition to get the drumming on that.
Yeah. And thankfully, some of the songs that I auditioned to were songs that Tommy and I had demoed up with Gene. So I knew the songs already.
For what album?
What's that? I don't know.
Were those demos for Psycho Circus, or are these demos from 5 years before?
Yeah, from like 5 years before. Gene's got songs for days, They both write up a storm.
So before we get too far down that path, do you recall who else auditioned?
No, I sure don't. I remember I only saw one other person there, and I can't recall who it was. He was horrible. I'm kidding.
Do you think Eric Singer auditioned?
I don't know, but I'd say probably not. You know what I mean? After being asked to not be in the band, sorry about that, I'm leaning. After not being in the band for so long, I think it would be awkward.
Right, and he was doing a lot of stuff with Alice Cooper at the time, too. So he wasn't, and I think he was also doing Brian May, and he had kept himself busy in those years.
Yeah.
So you get the gig, and now, of course, everything has to be a secret. So do you run home and tell the wife? Can you tell anybody? Or did I make you sign a contract saying, keep this quiet?
You know what? I did tell the wife. That's probably why we're still together after, 30-some years. And you know what? And having said that, I mean, she is a trainer out here in Los Angeles, and she's working with, she was working with the Spielbergs and actors, and she knew Dope on People before it came out in, mags the following. Right. She never blabbed either, so... she wasn't, there was no concern about that, of course. And no, I don't think I did sign a contract, but I think they knew me for quite a while. If they did have any question, I'm sure they asked Eric, do you think Kevin's good, to his word? And he probably said, yeah, I've known him for a long time. I'm sure he said that. And Eric's always been a great help for me coming out here. He was out here before I was, and he was always a great supporter of me. So yeah, he always did good stuff for me.
Now on the
go ahead, get a drink.
On the album itself, there's other musicians on there. Tommy Thayer came in, Bruce came and did a couple of bits. How present were Gene and Paul? And I mean, was all the music done by sort of you, Bruce, and Tommy?
Tommy, as you know, Tommy did, I'm sorry, Bruce did play...
he played bass on a couple of tracks.
Yeah. Tommy and Paul played on everything.
Okay.
I don't remember Bruce playing on a lot of guitar. You know, I think he was just doing bass work.
Yeah, he was doing the bass work.
Yeah. It was a fun recording. But it was a little odd for me, too, you know, because, you know, it's the all-original banding. And quite truthfully, you know, as you know, Ace and Peter played on, what, Into the Void. And, you know, I like that better than the stuff I played on because, to me, that chemistry is more Kiss. I'm not saying what I played on is bad, but, you know, it would have been nice for them to play on the record. I'm not quite sure why they didn't. I know that there were probably some financial things that I heard of. I don't know what right. they were, but yeah, I'm not quite sure. And then again, I'm not going to say ask enough questions where I'd lose the gig either. You know what I'm saying? Right. Like, boy, I really feel bad for Ace and Peter. Can't we work this out? No. Okay, Kevin.
Everyone goes to therapy.
Yeah, okay.
It's like, Kevin, just shut up and play the drums. That's what we're paying you for.
So, Go ahead, Tommy.
Well, I was just going to ask, can you just briefly, Kevin, just walk us through the recording process again? This type of stuff fascinates me. You show up day one, and then do you start just rehearsing together in a room? Did you have demos ahead of time? How do you start the whole thing and put the record together?
Yeah, Gene and I worked for quite a while at a rehearsal place in Los Angeles. And again, he would bring in tapes and he'd have his bass there and I'd go through the tapes and I'd listen to songs, you know, try to nab the parts, get the vibe. And he would come in and we'd play together and we worked up the songs that way. And you know, the funny thing is, I think Mitch, you and I talked about this before and I can't remember demoing with Paul. That's my phone vibrating. I can't remember demoing with Paul, or maybe I do. Anyway, sorry, I'm glitching out. But we did demo stuff up. I think we did demo with Paul. So when we got into the recording, at that time I was already involved in TV and movies as far as mixing goes. After I did the tour, after I ran sound for the band, my daughter was 2 weeks old when I left, and when I came back, I said, this is very stressful with kids. You know, I had two kids, and my daughter was two, so it wasn't that good, and I decided to get into TV mixing and movies because it's Hollywood, and I get to come home, and it was a good thing. So I would track, I think, from 9 till around 3 or 4 o'clock, and then I went off and did night TV stuff, you know? I thought going in that this was going to not work, you know? And I said to my wife, I said, I'm going to come up to these guys and say, listen, I can work from 9 till 3, and then I turn into a pumpkin. And they're going to say, go take a walk. We can't do that, right?
Right.
But they
right.
said, no problem, because what I would do is we would track and get as many new tracks as possible, and then if they wanted to stay on, they could stay all night. I know that Fairburn didn't like to work all night, but they would just do overdubs, so it worked out to be a good thing.
So what was the relationship like with the band and Bruce? How did that compare to Bob Ezrin? Is there a different vibe, different feel in the studio?
Yeah. I mean, Fairburn was far more, I would say, reserved and less opinionated. He would let the band more on their own, I would say. Not that that's wrong or right, but I think that's the way it was. Again, you know, I played the tracks, and I, you know, 3 o'clock, I turned into a pumpkin, so I didn't get to see too much behind the scenes, you know. But
did they try to instruct you to play and feel like Peter might on this album?
That was the question I was going to ask. Yeah, and also, further to that question, did they make you configure your drum set to be with, you know, a single bass, more like a Peter drum set? Did they do anything like that?
No, actually, so I have to tell you, I was a little surprised that they didn't ask me to play more like Peter and, you know, use maybe a kit more like Peter, even though I did just use one bass drum. Yeah, and kind of in a way, I kind of wish they did, because it might have sounded more like the original band. But no, that didn't happen. And hey, did you watch the Super Bowl yesterday? Yeah, power outage.
Power trouble.
But was the point of the album, were they trying to make it sound like a Kiss album of yesteryear? I mean, were they trying to fool everybody in that kind of context?
I don't know if fool everyone was the it was correct, but they did want to have more of a vintage sound. And on that note, you know, I wish that my drums had sounded more like older vintage. And, right. And you know, that record was compressed to tears. You know, I mean, it was, you know, it was the loudness mastering wars at that time. And that lends itself to a much more modern record. It would have been nice if it were more of a classic sound, but, you know, it was what it was.
Just speaking of a classic sound, we haven't asked, were you a Kiss fan?
Yeah, I was. I was also kind of a muso guy, where as a Zeppelin or a Rush were cool because they were more technical, and Kiss was more commercial. I was. It's a funny story. I played in a club band, a bar band, once I got out of high school, and our manager tried to get us our asses going and write original stuff and motivate the band by saying that we were going to open before Kiss during a show. Of course, we weren't, because he didn't have any connections. And but it worked. You know?
Power of
thought. So Psycho Circus gets recorded and comes out, and all of a sudden there's the discussion. I mean, the internet is starting to kind of become something at that point in time. So Kiss fans are online, and all of a sudden the discussion is, that's not Ace, that's not Peter, even though Gene and Paul in interview after interview are saying it is. You know, and then the name Kevin Valentine starts popping up. Oh, I heard from so-and-so that so-and-so said that Kevin Valentine played on this.
Mm-hmm.
What was it like at that moment as all of this was going on for you?
Well, it was a little awkward, and I'll tell you why, because I did not blab to anyone. You know, I didn't think it was right. You know, there were many, you know, hidden numbers playing on records. So I did like you were talking about. I was online and I see all these comments about, and they had it down, man. They nailed it. You know, this is not Kevin. This might be Ace. This might be Peter. And they were pretty friggin' accurate. So I ended up forwarding to that stuff to Paul, because, you know, I just wanted to let him know. I said, listen, Paul, there's a lot of talk here, and I just want to let you know I didn't have anything to do with it. But, you know, they're right on the money with this stuff.
Does Paul believe you at that point, or does he say, yeah,
no,
like a guilty mind?
No, he did. Okay. Yeah, he said, look, he said, you know, we have the best fans on the planet. I mean, they're just crazy. Yeah.
There you go.
And we've got the number one crazy one joining us every week.
Mommy over here, yeah. What?
Oh, yeah. No, I'm a bandwagon jumper, remember?
The songs themselves, as a Kiss fan, they didn't sound like Kiss songs to me. Did you actually like the songs when you first heard Psycho Circus and We Are One, or did you say, oh, God, what is this, and I'm just getting a paycheck?
I did like them, but I would have liked them to sound more like the old stuff, you know, the old, more rock and roll stuff.
Okay, well, I'm going to jump in, Kevin. I want to ask you these questions. Just for clarification, can you explain to everybody, when you say play more like Peter, kind of give people an idea of what you mean when you say that from a drumming perspective? And then also, too, you know, what's similar between both of the Erics and Peter, and then what's different? Because for me, as a Kiss fan, I just look at those records as they are what they are in the moment. And I guess I wasn't expecting anything on Psycho Circus at all other than a Kiss record. So I didn't dissect it. Either I liked it or I didn't. I still love the song itself, but I thought the record overall was, you know, okay.
Yeah. I think the main difference between Peter and I are, I kind of play with kind of a laid back, feel, you know, say like a British drummer, if you will, you know.
Okay.
And I think Peter is very straight. I mean, if you listen to his hi-hat work, I mean, he's very straight 16ths, and I'm kind of like loping like this.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah, I think it's a different, I mean, the difference could be like, I think John Bonham, who I think learned a lot from swing bands because he was quite a bit older than, you know, we are, and that was his influence. And the swing bands did that. They really swung. Not to mention, I mean, he could do the boosh, bosh, straight stuff, but, you know, in between, in his playing, he had a lot of swing, where Jason, his son, I don't think swings at all.
Okay.
Playing
dashes.
Yeah, but and you would think that it would come along with the genes, but maybe it's just not that. You know what I mean? Maybe the musical ability comes, you know, through the genes, but the style and comes from, you know, you're listening to music and your interpretation of the music, and when it goes through the U filter, it comes out. And they're not the same, even though it's father and son.
Well, and it seems like so many of the albums, at least from my perspective, are very different. We've kind of talked a little bit about that. But I'm curious, like, if you look at some of the older Kiss records, and mm-hmm. then you compare it to, say, like, Creatures. I don't know if you ever heard that record or not, but Creatures of the Night was one of the biggest drum-sounding albums I think I've ever heard in my entire life. Could you ever take someone who is a drummer like Peter and make that kind of a sound? Because it seems like with some of the old Kiss records as well, it's not as full as even like Bunny Carlos's drums on a particular record. So is it more by the way it's being made, or how do you...
Yeah, I'm sorry. It's both. It's really both. Okay. And I could speak from an engineering standpoint as well, because, you know, I kind of do that. Well, I more than kind of do it. When you're right about that drum sound, but you have to realize that when a band is around for a long, long, long time, they want to progress. So at one point they said, hey, let's get a big-ass drum sound. So having said that, yes, I think that Eric did a great job with that. I think it would have been a little harder for Peter to do it because he didn't play in that style. It was less bashing, and when you have that much room mic going as well, that's what gives it the big sound. A lot of room mic, you know, the drums are here, and then you have mics in the room capturing the room, the drums in the room. I mean, you have to do things like not really bash your cymbals that hard, because then it just bleeds too much into everything and it ruins the sound. So there is a bit of technique that has to be played in order for that to happen. I don't know if Peter could have done it or not. I think that I'm sure Eric did do it much better. You know, that sound, that big sound. I love that. I mean, that was big stuff. That was great.
Yeah.
Now, after Psycho Circus comes out, there's the 3D tour, greatest mm-hmm. tour on earth. Peter hasn't played
again.
Mm-hmm. No, but Peter hasn't played Psycho Circus. He hasn't played Within. He hasn't played all these songs that are going to be on the set list. So now you sit down with him and have to teach him those parts? Is that a correct assumption?
You know what? I can't recall if I did that or not. I must have.
Right, because, I mean... do you think Peter just put the album on and learned it by himself? He must have had some help somewhere.
Yeah, you know, I wasn't... I honestly didn't think he was going to be able to do it.
Okay.
From our...
technical... Okay.
Yeah. But, you know, that show I thought was awesome. You know, when they opened up, you know, with one of the new songs, I mean, it couldn't have been any better.
Is it strange for you being in the audience at Dodger Stadium and then hearing Psycho Circus come out and you go, he's playing my, like, shouldn't, you know, does that feel weird for you?
You can't tap the shoulder of the person next to you and go, I recorded that.
Yeah, and they go, fuck off, I'm trying to listen to the band.
No, that's Peter playing, man.
Well, yeah, that would have been said. Yeah, it was kind of weird, but in a sense, you know, that you were responsible in a way for bringing you know, that portion of the whole thing together, you know, and again, you know, that I'd be out of my mind to, you know, feel too poorly because, you know, up until that point, I mean, they were KISS and they did, you know, they did everything up until that point to get where they were. I mean, I mean, how can I possibly take credit for that or feel too bad? I mean, I contributed to the record.
Right.
Yeah, it would have been great if that were me up there, but it wasn't. So, you know, say
it'll be. Was there a point after Psycho Circus came out, I don't know, a year, 2 years, 3 years, however, where sort of what maybe unofficially the embargo was lifted and it was like, okay, you can tell people you did this?
You know, when that point came, when Gene came out with his book and you know, mentioned that, I suppose the secret probably you know, diminished a little bit as it went along. And And, you know, if someone said to me, hey, you know, did you play in these records and stuff? You know, I would say, yeah. I mean, it wasn't anything I was doing in a publication. You know, I wasn't going out and blabbing. And, you know, I don't want to, you know, mess people up. So, yeah, but I wouldn't, you know, if someone asked, sure, I would do that, you know, because, you know, they'd go, well, cool, you know. And sometimes people think you're good by the projects you played on. You know what I mean? And
yeah, that's a good point, too.
Yeah.
So given that, during that time frame when you couldn't talk about it, could you even, quote, put it on your resume?
No. No, I didn't. No. I mean, again, if it came up and if you or I were talking and, you know, you were interested in using me to play on a record or whatever, I suppose I would have to say that, you know. And I wasn't saying anything. I was saying quite a bit less than was already on the internet. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah, but that just makes you a stand-up guy.
Right, and that's how you stay in the business, by the way. You have to keep your mouth shut. And you've been on, your discography is actually quite large. You've been on about 30 albums or 40 albums or something like that, right? You did the Cinderella album and then Donnie Iris and so many more.
Yeah. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead. Just finish that thought.
Yeah, there was a time when I usually stay in a band quite a bit longer than I did towards the end of some of this. But yeah, I went from, in a short period of time, and I don't feel good about it, but I went from Frampton to Lou Gramm to Cinderella in about, I don't know, a year and a half.
Wow.
And it's kind of awkward to have to do that, you know what I mean? I mean, you know, because, I mean, for instance, with the Peter Frampton thing, I went... A friend of mine was auditioning for bass, the bass player position, and I said, who is playing at this jam to try you out? He said, they have a drum machine. I said, well, you know, I'll come down and play, you know, and it's going to be better than a drum machine. So myself and Todd Jensen went down, and Todd ended up going with Steve Perry, and I ended up getting the gig. So, you know, Peter and I did a lot of hanging out. So... to have to quit that, it was tough. I mean, you know, because, you know, it was far more than just putting a band together. And I don't like doing that, but, you know, at the time I had to do it.
Did you ever have any other recordings that you went in similar to KISS Psycho Circus with somebody else and you had to keep quiet about contributing?
I would suggest Cinderella Still Climbing. Wasn't that a secret? Didn't they try to pull it off as it being Fred Curry and not you?
You know, I don't even know. I mean, I so disconnected from that. It was such a, you know, it was such a sour taste in my mouth that I just fucking cut ties and moved on.
Right.
And it's unfortunate because you know, Tom's a really great guy. I mean, he's just a sweetheart. He's such a generous guy, and they got into what my opinion is into the weird drummer land where, you know, nothing's good enough. You know,
right.
and I hear stories on the second record where, you know,
they brought in Cozy Powell.
Yeah, and that wasn't good enough, and they were going to get a drum machine to play on a song, and it's like, come on, guys. I mean, really,
drum machine over Cozy Powell. Yeah, but you know.
Go ahead.
Back to KISS, though, it's 15 years on since the Psycho Circus album. How do you look back at it? Has it grown on you? Do you not listen to it at all? Are you disgusted? Do you love it?
No, I still love a lot of stuff on that record. Yeah. I also do, speaking of that record, the record before, the record before I think I like more than Psycho Circus.
Carnival of Souls?
Previous, the one that Eric and I played on.
Revenge.
Yeah. Well, I know, Mitch, we talked about this. I mean, you know, you do a record and you know, you have all the good intentions and you line up all the right things and sometimes it doesn't come off. And, you know, like I tell Eric constantly, dude, I friggin' love this record. I mean, I love what he played on that record. I think it was just brilliant. It was just fucking brilliant. I heard, funny enough, I heard God Gave Rock and Roll this morning on a drive and it just floors me. And it just floors me how good it is.
Yeah,
that's a great record. It really
for the
is.
Psycho Circus recordings, there was rumors that there were about 30 songs made. Were there 30 songs? Were there 25? Were there 15?
There were at least. Let's see. There were probably upwards of 25.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
25 that were actually finished.
Tracked. That I recorded.
Okay.
And then,
okay.
You know, in the studio, it's kind of like a little race, and you know, this song gets better, this song pulls ahead, right. and you just work on the songs that start turning into something better or something or a song you need, you know, for the record, like if you need a ballad. I'm sure they have tracks somewhere. I don't know if they'll ever surface.
Kevin, one of the things that we've kind of debated on and off on this show is, at least from my perspective, in the early 80s up till about 1990, I felt the band was lost because they were chasing after other people who were doing something different at the time. I'm curious to know, did you see anything like that during the Psycho Circus sessions or even Revenge where they weren't being themselves and they were trying to maybe capture something that's not them? Does that make sense? I mean, maybe I'm asking this a weird way, but...
Oh, no, you know. It does. It does. Yeah. Okay. I think there was probably... I think that there was the Gene and Paul disconnect, meaning that I think at one point they probably wrote more together, and now they're kind of like bringing in songs from each one of them. Yeah, I thought that, like, the song that Gene wrote, you mentioned it before, the you and I and the whole thing.
We are one.
We are one.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, to me, I don't know, to me it just didn't sound like a typical Gene song, you know? It's, you know.
Yeah, late 90s, going into his solo album, he got into this I'm the Beatles kind of vibe. It was...
Yeah, but, you know, I mean, with all due respect, I mean, he is... hugely influenced by the Beatles.
Yeah, but it just but he was the demon up until 1995, and then he became I'm Paul McCartney on his solo album, and on it was sort of strange. But listen,
I mean, it was definitely a different turn for the band, and I think, you know, Tommy kind of nailed it for me as well. As when that album came out, I wasn't expecting anything other than a Kiss album, and it was a Kiss album of the moment, and it definitely was different. I mean, when I heard We Are One, I was like, wow, this is not Gene, but at the same time, I was like, I love that song. It's it's a side of Gene that, you know, you've never seen before. And when I think there was an interview where he said, listen, he really wanted to showcase the influence the Beatles have had on him. God bless him. Go for it. I mean, it's your band. You know, it worked.
Well, and I don't have an issue with that. The bigger problem for me is that I never know what to expect from a Kiss record anymore. That's the difference. Like, again, going back to Cheap Trick, I know what a Cheap Trick record is going to be.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the confusing part for me as a fan. It's like, so I guess I don't have any preconceived notions about that or Monster or Sonic Boom. I just want the songs to be good for whatever they are and the record to be solid and something that I want to listen to for more than a week, you know, and I feel like they've accomplished that, at least from my perspective now, more so over these last couple of records.
Yeah, well, you know, you can't expect them to, you know, repeat the first record over and over. And then, you know, due credit here, they have changed, And like you said, I think you're right. As long as the record is a good record, no matter what version of Kiss it is, I think it's enjoyable.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
it's like when Motley Crue came out, they got back together and they came out with
Generation Swine.
Yes, and I'm just like, what in the hell is this? Because there was a couple of really good songs on it, but it wasn't a Motley Crue record. But yet, Too Fast for Love is completely different than Dr. Feelgood, and I feel the same way about the Kiss records. I don't want them to recreate Rock and Roll Over. I just want a good, solid record.
Right, yeah. I agree.
Now, I think we're getting to the point where we probably should wrap this up. I just want to have one last question. Can you just walk me a little bit through what Tommy Thayer was going through when he came to that album? I mean, he had been sort of the guitar tech, and he had been ace in a tribute band, and now he's going to play on a record. Did he say anything to you? Was he excited? Was he scared? Was he, oh my God, I'm pulling off a, what?
Did you and Tommy go out for beers afterwards alone and just go, do you believe we're fucking playing on a Kiss record?
The funny thing is, we were in, kind of in the same camp with his tribute band, because I used to run sound for them. So, we went from the tribute band to the real band.
Right.
I can't remember. I can't remember exactly how Tommy reacted. I think I know he was jazzed, but I think it's more than. with a lot of bands, I think it goes too far. But I think it's more than just musicianship. Good try on that one. And it's also about the personalities of people. And I think that Kiss, Gene's known Tommy forever. Practically, yeah. And I think, you have to feel comfortable with a group of people, when you're working with them, because it's not a bean counter thing. It's not just by the numbers, you do have to vibe a bit, yeah. And I think that's important as well. Like The Who, I thought that, I don't think there's a replacement for Keith Moon. I thought that I forgot his name.
Was it Kenny?
Kenny, yeah. He was a drinking buddy. I don't think he belonged in the band. That's where it goes too far. It's like,
belong in Kiss?
Nice one.
Yeah? Should you have put on Peter's makeup?
Do you fit into Peter's costumes as well as Eric does?
I never had a chance to try them on. Do I fit into Kiss? I fit into the recordings I did.
Yeah.
I think it's that record in time. I think there are probably other drummers that might be better as like, hey, we need a guy to do this whole Kiss thing. I don't know.
Did they give you a gold album for Psycho Circus?
I got one.
Oh, cool.
I have it.
Jesus, fanboy. I got another question for you. Have you, Kevin, have you had a chance to hear any of the recordings that the four of them now have done either on Sonic Boom or Monster?
Actually, no. The only thing I heard was their performance on Letterman.
Okay.
And were they on twice? Right?
Yes, twice.
Yeah.
They did Modern Day Delilah and then Hella Hallelujah on Letterman.
I called Eric and I told him I thought it was friggin' awesome. I did. I thought the mix was incredible. I mean, the guitar, TV, many times TV mixes, they just don't hold up. I thought it was fucking brilliant. The guitars were screaming. There was energy there. I mean, Eric's doing this triplet at the end of the song, and I think I texted him. I said, "Are you doing a triplet at the end of this song?" Meaning it's not a quad. It's a triplet. It's kind of an old school thing to do. And he goes, "Yeah, it's cool." And I said, "Yeah, it is." I thought it was brilliant. I haven't heard the records.
Well, the reason I ask is because, again, to go back to your point about. And going too far, this is a bone of contention for a lot of people, a lot of fans. And I like what they're doing now. you know, and I've maintained this since the beginning. They did what they wanted them to do. They did the reunion. We're done with that. And I like the band moving forward. And I just wanted to know from your perspective what your thoughts are on something like that. Because I've got no issue. If a good record is good and they put it out and we enjoy it, that's all that matters and the tour is good.
Yeah, well, in the long run, that's what counts. I mean, if you hear a record and it moves you, that's all that counts. Now, if it's not Ace and it's not Peter, you know, if you could put that aside and say it is what it is, then it's, you know, it's beneficial for human beings. I can't remember. I mean, I love that performance on Letterman. I just thought it was the best thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, speaking of performance, you have a guitar back there. Are you going to play Psycho Circus for us acoustic?
You know what?
No?
Gene and Paul won't allow me to do that.
You can tell everybody you played on the album. You just can't play the album.
Can't play the album. That's right.
That's right. Very good. Well, yeah.
How about playing some Cinderella then?
Yeah. Well, maybe not. Oh. That's like getting blood from a stone, right?
Yeah.
Donnie Iris.
I still play with Donnie. Yeah, Donnie's great. Yeah. No, it's.
And I still say that Kevin would be a great guest at all the Kiss Expos. He doesn't feel that way, but come on, wouldn't you want to go shake his hand and because he can make good money?
Well, listen, and this is no disrespect to Bruce or Eric, but they have been at every expo 20 times over, and there's nothing more that they can say or do. And I think Kiss fans want something new that they haven't heard or seen before, and you would be it.
And you've been on three albums. I mean, you know, that's...
You know, it is kind of fun to talk about this stuff. You know, Mitch, when I did that interview with you, because, I mean, other than friends, I've never talked to anyone about this, and, you know, it's kind of fun. Yeah, I'll go. Invite me.
Yeah. Well, that's why we were excited to talk to you today, because it's neat to hear something that everyone doesn't know.
Hmm. Yeah, well, good. I'm glad I added.
It was great.
Cool.
Yeah. Is there anything else that we need to add? Do you have any websites that you need to plug? You could find your tour dates with Donnie Iris on the web.
No, DonnieIris.com is the website. I'm just doing TV and movies, and I play on sessions. Play with Donnie occasionally. I have my own studio, which is lovely because my kid is set up and mic'd all the time. No cheap plugs.
So if on the next Kiss record they needed to have somebody cover for Eric, are you ready?
Oh, yeah, I'd love to do that.
Sorry, Eric, but Kevin's coming in to play the drum parts this time.
No, I'd love to play I'd love to play on anything good. It's just fun.
And we shouldn't set it up as though Eric and Kevin have some kind of rivalry.
No, not at all. You're
friends.
Yeah. Right? I can't say enough about Eric because, like I said, he moved out here prior to that. I did. And remember when we were growing up and we were in high school, I was probably 2 years or so ahead of him. So he was standing outside, you know, the hall in school, and I was playing in the band in school. So, you know, that 2 years in school is a big deal. You know, it's that Kevin is playing. Oh, I want to do that. You know, it's kind of, you know, it makes a big difference when you're 19 years old. So, you know, Eric has been a real good a fan of mine. And when I came out here, and even now, he's always been great and throwing me work. And I can't say enough about him.
That's awesome.
Yeah, he's awesome.
Well,
thank you.
I think this was amazing. We got some great conversation and some great insight into the studio, which I know as a fan, the studio seems the one area of Kiss that they've just never really opened the doors to.
Yeah.
So, Kevin, thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you, Kevin. We really appreciate you taking the time like this today.
Sure. Yeah. My pleasure.
So, guys, that was pretty cool. Kevin Valentine kind of finally came out. Didn't he say, I'm coming out of the closet?
I know. I almost said something and I didn't.
Came out of the closet and talked about everything that Kiss fans pretty much have suspected and known, but nobody has confirmed for a long time.
Yeah, you know, a nice guy.
You know, we've we've all heard the stories of Kevin playing on Revenge and playing on Psycho Circus, and we've heard, you know, about Bruce and Tommy, but they've never talked about it publicly, and that's what makes it interesting. We've all sort of read it on a bulletin board or on a, you know, Kiss Fact site or something, but to actually have the actual person tell us the experience, tell him how he went through it, and that he actually had to audition. Who knew they held auditions for Psycho Circus? I thought they just picked up the guy that knew because...
I wish he could have remembered who some of the... Come on, Mitch. Who could you imagine would have also auditioned?
I don't know.
I mean, that's the whole new... All right, Kiss fans, here's your holy grail. Go out there and find out who else auditioned to record Psycho
Circus.
Yeah,
and listen, I got to tell you, I've spoken to Kevin before, and I've heard these stories before, and some stories he didn't tell, but that audition one was the first time he's ever mentioned that, so I'm completely blown away by it. I mean, I didn't even think that Kiss would have auditioned, because if you're trying to have this secret, you know, reunion album, holding sort of secret or even open auditions is the best way to blow the cover, so to hear that they had auditions is mind-blowing. Now, either Kevin knows who the other people are, or a lot of times when you have auditions, you have no clue.
No, yeah, you came in and auditioned at 10 a.m. and you're gone by noon, and the next guy comes in at 1, and you have no idea who's coming and going.
It's probably just like the Rockstar movie.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, listen, on Kiss Revenge, they had 5 guys audition, or they had 5 guys try. They had Eric Singer, Eric Carr, they had Kevin, they had Phil Ainslie, and who was the other 4? Who's the 5th guy? I can't remember. Oh, but
you're a fanboy.
Peter Criss.
Yeah, Peter Criss. Peter Criss on Unholy. A-tap-a-tap, 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 Unholy. Yeah, that would have been great. I didn't say that. Oh, yeah, so I don't know if Kevin knows who... I don't think Eric Singer had anything to do with it. Honestly, I think at that point, I don't want to say he was mad at the band, but I think he might have been, you know, just a little hurt about how the reunion stuff was... He's a little sore. And listen, he wasn't hurting for work. He was doing stuff with Brian May. He was out on tour. They played South Africa and other places. He was with Alice Cooper making albums, doing tours. And I believe there was somebody else in that time that he played. Anyway, he didn't need to do a Kiss studio album, and especially a Kiss studio album that wouldn't have his name on it. I
was actually really excited to get Mitch to admit the truth that he actually likes Bob Ezrin.
Listen, I like the albums. What I'm saying is that after the albums,
backtracking the and qualifying that statement.
No, absolutely not.
I seem to recall a previous episode where he hated Bob Ezrin.
Yep, I remember that.
No, pay attention. Let's pay attention. Let's pay attention.
He boxed him into a corner.
Nope, he did Love It to Death. He did Billion Dollar Babies. Next thing you know, Alice Cooper is doing Welcome to My Nightmare because he's brought in all these players. He comes to Kiss. He does, brings in Dick Wagner twice. He brings in Steve Hunter. After Destroyer, band disappears. After The Elder, didn't want to use Ace, got rid of Eric Carr in the track, band breaks up. Brings in Revenge, band. That's what I'm saying. And he did the
I
same thing with
Pink Floyd. I know how this story ends, Tommy.
So he makes great...
I've heard this before.
Let me put it this way. Bob Ezrin makes excellent Bob Ezrin albums, and he hires different bands to play his music. But he doesn't care about the bands.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Aren't we over the 45 minutes at this point?
Did you know that the Chinese hacked the Super Bowl lights last night?
Actually, they were the ones who put Vinnie Vincent in Kiss.
Yes. It was a plot.
I'm trying to figure out if I have the ability to mute Mitch LaFon.
No.
No, what you need to do is you need to piece in the thing from one of the last episodes where he says he hates Bob Ezrin. That's what you need to do, Mikey.
Listen, he destroyed the bands. He's destroyed 3 bands.
Oh, God. Are we done? I think we're done.
Yeah,
we're done.
Listen, is there anything more to say? If you guys like this or hate this, either way, let us know. Head over to our Facebook page, Three Sides of the Coin, or the YouTube channel, and leave us comments. We are all active. We are all replying. We love discussions. So let us know what you think.
Well, I'd love to hear how you tell everyone that Mitch is wrong. So please, everyone, keep bringing that in.
For more good stuff, go to twitter.com, Mitch LaFon. You'll get all the great gossip.
Yeah. That's where Mitch admits the real truth about how much he loves Bob Ezrin.
And Vinny Vincent.
Speaking of which, Vinny Vincent was the greatest guitarist Kiss ever had. Really?
Too bad Bob Ezrin didn't produce him.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well,
he did on Revenge. Didn't Vinny play that unholy solo? Wait, what? We've been doing this too long today.
Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah. Because I can't take any more fanboy.
Silliness apart, this has been fun, and we got to thank Kevin once again.
Yes.
Yeah, Kevin's amazing. What a cool guy.
Awesome. Some really cool, fun stories.
And there's more stories in there to get. Someday.
All right, so everybody, leave your comments. Let us know what you think. Thanks for watching. Take care.
Good night now.
See ya.